the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean. Good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to America's most listened to late night talk show, Coast to Coast AM. We'll have open lines for you this hour, the entire hour. I'll give you the numbers in just a moment. Next hour, Ken Parsons, our guest, with a night of prophecy. First, though, before we get into some of the stories of the day, our deepest condolences to producer Lisa Lyon and her family. Lisa's mother died over the weekend. Let me tell you something. I've been able to work with Lisa now for about 3 years, going on four. She's a wonderful person. And I've always believed that the character of a person directly attributed to the way your parents bring you up. And Lisa's mother and father have done a great job with her. Our deepest sympathies to producer Lisa Lyon on the death of her mother. Well, last week, Friday, I talked about a technique for dissipating clouds sent in by a Coast listener, Anita. And those of you who may have tried it, why don't you send me a fast blast and we'll share it with everyone to see if it worked. I have not tried it yet, not with those techniques. Well, the jury that convicted Scott Peterson of murdering his wife and unborn baby recommended that he get the death penalty. Peterson clenched his jaw when the verdict was read and leaned over to speak with his attorney, Mark Garagos, but showed no other emotion. As the death recommendation was read, Lacey Peterson's mother, Sharon Rocha, cried, her lips quivering. Scott Peterson's mother, Jackie, showed no apparent emotion. Garagos spoke briefly to reporters after the recommendation was handed down, saying that obviously we're disappointed and that they plan on pursuing all appeals, motions for a new trial and everything else. All 12 jurors made an appearance at a news conference. Three stayed to speak to reporters. One of them said it's hard to narrow it down to one specific topic. There are many. When you add it all up, there doesn't seem to be any other possibility. The six-man, six-woman jury found Peterson guilty November 12th, the first-degree murder in the killing of his pregnant wife, Lacey Peterson, and the second-degree murder in the death of the fetus that she was carrying. Very strange story indeed. Another journalist has apparently committed suicide now. That is three. As you well know, we are tracking the very strange deaths of microbiologists around this planet. Now, journalists in this country, three of them have died by suicide. The latest, Gary Webb, a former Mercury News investigative reporter, author, and legislative staffer who ignited a firestorm with his very controversial stories, died Friday in an apparent suicide in his suburban Sacramento home. Normally, I don't read suicide stories. This one is very, very peculiar. He was 49 years old. The Sacramento County Coroner's Office said that when a Better Moving company arrived at Mr. Webb's home, they discovered a note on the front door which said, "Please do not enter. Call 911. Ask for an ambulance." The award-winning journalist was found dead of a gunshot wound to the head, according to the coroner. Mr. Webb's friends and colleagues described him as a devoted father and a funny reporter who was passionate about investigative journalism. As a staff writer for the Mercury News from 1989 to 97, he exposed freeway retrofitting problems in the 1989 Loma Prieta earthquake and wrote stories about the Department of Motor Vehicles' computer software fiascos. But that's not the big story. Mr. Webb was perhaps best known for sparking a national controversy with a 1996 story that contended supporters of a CIA-backed guerrilla army in Nicaragua helped trigger America's crack cocaine epidemic in the 1980s. You might remember that story. The Dark Alliance series and the Mercury News came under fire by other news organizations. The paper's own investigation concluded the series did not meet its standards. Mr. Webb resigned a year and a half after the series appeared in the paper. He then published his book, Dark Alliance, the CIA, the Contras, and the Crack Cocaine Explosion. He is dead at the age of 49. Ukrainian lawmakers reopened their investigation into Viktor Yushchenko's allegations that authorities tried to kill him, after doctors in Austria determined that the presidential candidate in the Ukraine had been poisoned by dioxin. A couple weeks ago, we posted his before and after pictures on the coasttocoastam.com website. I'm telling you, the after pictures still look pretty bad on this guy. I mean, he is just, his face has just been destroyed by apparently now this dioxin. The decision, by the way, to follow through on this will be a December 26 runoff, a new election, because the Ukrainian Supreme Court voided the November 21st election because of fraud. Yashchenko fell ill on September 5th and was treated at a clinic in Vienna. Doctors suspected poison, but that they needed to conduct more tests. He returned to the clinic last week, and they have determined that it was dioxin possibly slipped into his food. And again, every time I look at the pictures on the website, it is just frightening. No story that I have seen, though, nothing, says whether he will go back to his old self again if this wears off. Maybe not. A strong earthquake rattled El Salvador, knocking out telephone service. No injuries reported. 6.1 on the Richter scale there. The Cassini spacecraft has made one last flyby of Titan before it dispatches the Huygens probe for a rendezvous with the Saturn moon. It will give engineers a final chance to obtain detailed information on the behavior of the satellite's atmosphere. This data will be essential if the probe is to have a fighting chance of surviving its entry into Titan's thick air on January 14th of next year, so that's not too far away. The flyby will also give scientists another peek at the mysterious moon. Because of smoggy conditions on Titan, the last two previous Cassini flybys, that was in July and October, failed to give any clear indication of the surface conditions that the space probe, when it plunges into the moon, will meet, if it makes it that far. But it's pretty incredible just to be able to sit back and watch this and see if this probe works. Over the weekend in Beijing, an unidentified flying object passed across the northern western Chinese city of Lanzhou and apparently exploded in the suburbs. They don't know what it was. Some witnesses say that they saw a fireball with a tail of about 9 feet darting across the sky before it blew up. One other witness says the whole sky lighted up for a long time. It was a huge explosion. China, by the way, has been hit by several waves of UFO sightings in recent years, and the country has a research organization devoted entirely to the study of possible extraterrestrial visits. On the coasttocoastam.com website, you'll see a story under Hot Stories. A blind man uses his sixth sense to detect emotion. A completely blind British man has been shown to possess an apparent sixth sense, which lets him recognize emotions on people's faces. The researchers say the 52-year-old was able to react to pictures of human faces showing emotions such as anger, happiness, or fear. It doesn't work for anything else, just those emotions. Brain scans show that when the man looked at faces expressing emotion, it activated a part of his brain called the right amygdala. Neil Slade would like that, which is known to respond to nonverbal emotional signs. Well, here are the phone numbers for open lines. West of the Rockies, 800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 800-825-5033. First-time caller line is 818-501-4721. And the wild card line is open for you right now at 818-501-4109. I'm George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Ken Parsons was drawn into prophecy pertaining to current events at the age of 8, and as a result of reading The Late Great Planet Earth by Hal Lindsey. He has been exposed to the teachings of many great Christian ministries throughout his life. Now a successful businessman, Ken invests his time sharing his insights on the events unfolding in the world today, as well as teaching where mysterious artifacts from years ago come from and how they fit into the prophetic timeline. He is our special guest tonight on Coast to Coast AM. Hi, Ken. How are you? Welcome back, by the way.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
My pleasure indeed. You know, I can't believe how fast this year has been going. We talked to you in May, I think, didn't we?
Yes.
And, you know, here we are in December already. Man, it just keeps moving along.
At lightning speed.
Yeah, it does. Almost as we get close to the year 2012, which I find to be a fascinating year myself. Does the Bible say anything about that year, Ken?
about the particular year,
yeah.
Unless there's something perhaps in the Bible codes themselves, there's nothing just on the surface level, nothing that I'm aware of that actually gives that particular year.
A lot of people, when they try to decipher biblical code and biblical prophecy, you talk to 15 people, can you come up sometimes with 15 different answers, 15 different thoughts?
There are reasons for that. Now, in the codes, the misconception is the ability to be able to tell the future. That's the misconception. It's one thing to know what words you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, if I went in there and I did a word search maybe years ago, maybe during Clinton, or maybe in the early days of Bush, and it might I might find George Bush, and I could find impeached, and then come to the conclusion, wow, George Bush is going to be impeached.
Right.
But the reality is, without the rest of the words, it could very well have been George Bush after Clinton, who is impeached. You know, without those words to put in the spaces, that's where the challenge is
mm-hmm.
starting predicting the future. It's more of a confirmation. I've always said the prophecy is more telling us when we are, where we are, maybe more than what's going to happen in the future. It's more about a mark, just letting you know where you're at right now,
confirming. So many different things I want to talk with you about with prophecy, because you truly bring a pretty revolutionary approach to this. But let's start at that chapter, that very famous chapter called the Book of Revelation. In your opinion, because, you know, you're the guest tonight, in your opinion, what do you think that chapter means?
To me, that book is the most remarkable and amazing book of all of them, not so much because of the content itself, as much as how we gain that content. It's actually John being time traveled from his time into our time, into the 21st century. It's a literal story about time travel. And now he's watching these things as they unfold and trying to describe first century, you know, with his knowledge of the first century, he's trying to describe 21st century events. He's looking at 21st century military equipment and then trying to describe this at the point that he went back. One of the one thing that will just make the Bible come alive is once you realize that John didn't write Revelation after the Gospel of John. You know, we think that because,
right.
we think linearly.
And what's the significance of that?
Well, because John is so dramatically different, because he actually writes his gospel after he has seen the things that he saw in Revelation.
Okay.
So that's why it's so dramatically different. You know, it's a fascinating book, but it's way different than the other three gospels.
All right. Could you have also called him a remote viewer?
Yes.
Okay.
Could have. You know, but as long as that means him being in the 21st century.
Right. Time traveler, remote viewer, whatever he might have been, he was able to get into that 21st century, which pins it pretty darn close now to us, doesn't it? To now.
Yes. Two-thirds of the Bible is written, it seems, about our generation. You know, a lot of people think, it would have been great to be around in Bible times. Well, the reality is, these are Bible times.
Did other past civilizations, though, in eras, all think that the Book of Revelation was written about them as we do?
No, not necessarily. And a good evidence of that is in the Scofield Reference Bible, in the references at the beginning of that particular book, they make a comment that we are going to interpret what we see here to the best of our ability. But they also make sure they say, this book will become more clear to the generation for which it is meant. In other words, stating it's not really for our time, but when that time comes, they will be able to look at this book and see things that we can't figure out. Good example, perfect example, is the Internet. Now, how before the Internet got here could you possibly have looked in Revelation and found it? You couldn't have.
No, you couldn't.
But having the internet and now looking at it, and it gives a complete description of the internet, it's absolutely amazing.
Well, give me a synopsis there where it kind of points out where the internet is.
It actually, it's when it goes into the area of Mystery Babylon. And it's a point when it's discussing Mystery Babylon. That's what the mystery was. Remember, John, again, is trying to describe these things through his first century eyes.
Sure.
And so he's,
which is difficult for him, right? It wasn't easy.
No. And that was one of the ways that this actually, you know, stays sealed till that particular generation comes along.
Mm-hmm.
But what we see is a description where all of a sudden John's trying to, the mystery of Babylon is the fact that he's looking at a cyber city. That's really the thing. And he starts discussing about a system where the merchants of the earth can get anything they absolutely want. Whenever you see just a massive laundry list of things listed, it's usually because they're trying to make some kind of strong point.
Does it kind of make any reference, Ken, to a new world order or a one world government or anything like that, which is always a concern?
Yes. In the book of Revelation, it absolutely, and also in Daniel specifically, it mentions the last world empire. The last empire, which will actually be a 10-nation federation. The entire world will be run by 10 nations, ultimately, but they will be a core group. And that, when you look at the European Union, the thing is that they are actually, the Western European Union are the primary 10 countries. There's the European Union Extended, where you get into the, you know, up to the 25 total members.
Right.
But then you have the core, the Western European Union, and they are the real... they call the shots. They are the permanent members. They were they began this. Everybody else, for all intents and purposes, they are actually honorary members.
Well, how does prophecy equate to the fact that they're going to try to take us all over?
If you could clarify that question,
okay.
I want to be sure that I answer.
Well, in my opinion, if there's a new world order, it's control, right?
Right.
That's what they want. They want control. They you know, that's their game. They've already got all the money they want. They want to be able to move people around like they're little pieces of a chessboard.
Okay.
How is that illustrated in biblical prophecy?
The way that is actually becomes pertinent, and that's one of the misconceptions. We look today and we see this new world order, and we can look at the Illuminati, and we can look at the Skull and Bones, and we can look at a vast array of secret societies, Bilderbergs. The thing that we have to remember is that this is a very, very big world. And the chances of them actually conspiring together, in other words, actually having a quote-unquote they, who want to use the world as a chessboard, the reality is it's very... It appears conspiratorial, but what we have to remember is that there are other forces at work. The spiritual orchestration of events, or the demonic powers, Lucifer, who are trying to prepare this planet, actually run all of these things from the outside. But it's a spiritual orchestration of events that make physical events appear as though there's a physical conspiracy, when in fact there may not be.
Do you think evil is behind some of this?
Evil's behind most of it, but it more is a preparation for what's going to happen as soon as we move into that great tribulation, that last 7 years. What we're seeing now is the preparation for that. We're seeing the vehicles being assembled that will be used to actually employ this. And we have to remember, for instance, the United Nations. They continue to weaken.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, from here on in, because they are not the last global empire. Daniel is very specific. It would be a revived Roman Empire. And then we have the European Union. They had actually affirmed that name at the Treaty of Rome. They are the same group of people. As a matter of fact, when the euro hit the streets, the headline read, for the first time since the Roman Empire, all of Europe shares the same currency. That was so prophetic. It was really an amazing thing. And for years and years, Israel was not a country. For years, when Israel was not a country, and you would read all of this prophecy as it pertains to Israel, you had a lot of people who were saying, well, replacement theology. Wherever you see America is the new Israel. So anywhere you see Israel, replace that with the United States. And that's supposed to be about us. But it was a real lack of faith. Because we also see where Ezekiel has describes a gathering of the Jews from all over the world and bringing them back to their homeland after a period that they've been sent out throughout the entire world.
I mean, the timeline looks pretty uncanny. That, what is spelled out in Revelation appears to be coming, the big question is, will it happen? Is it accurate? But in terms of a timeline, I can see where it seems like it's getting pretty close to now.
Well, let me tell you, that's the thing. I have been so involved in this for so long, most of my life. And I remember in the old days, I would just, stacks of newspapers. I would have to go to the magazine stand and, get all these different newspapers and then and try to weed through them. With the internet, it makes it just so much easier now. But it gave me some time to sort of get my bearing. It's almost like you're just falling into the groove of the chronology. It's almost like when I watch my little girls and they play jump rope. You've got the two girls and they're flipping the one rope. You've got a third girl that's kind of, leaning forward, leaning back, leaning forward, waiting to get that feel, and then jumping in there so that they can, get in the middle and not mess the rope up while they're jumping. It's the same kind of a thing. And that's why, because I've been doing it for so long, it's just become a natural part of my daily routine, is when I was able to finally pick up where the Bible was actually chronologically laid out. In other words, it does fall into, this happens, and then this happens, and then this happens.
A story today, Ken, you talk about prophecy. A story today says, for the first time in years, Russia and China will hold joint military exercises.
Absolutely, and it's all described in there. I mean, I could tell you where it's going next. That's the incredible thing. The entire military activity is laid out for us. We have Russia. Now, one of the keys is, of course, you have to understand, you have to know who your cast of characters are.
Right.
In other words, just to give you a rundown, the Philistines, which you remember, David and Goliath.
Sure.
Well, Goliath was a Palestinian. The Palestinians are the Philistines.
A giant, no doubt.
Of old. Well, no, he was a giant. He wasn't the same giant that you and
like
you're
Stephen
probably talking
Quayle
about, the Nephilim.
Yeah. Okay.
He was just a, genetic
mishap.
Yeah.
Okay.
But he was a Palestinian. I mean, that conflict has been going on for that long. Then you also have Cush, who is South Africa, specifically Sudan and Ethiopia. You've got Put, which is North Africa, specifically Libya. And we've seen where Libya has given up their nuclear program, and they still hate our guts, but, they supposedly are out there playing ball. That's all part of what we're seeing put together for this next great war. We have Magog, who is Russia. Persia is Iran. We have Meshech, which is Turkey. Tubal, which is actually a part of Russia, further south. Gomer, which is the old Germania, or part of Europe.
Yeah, that's true.
And we have Armenia, which is a Tagorma. So when you look at these things, you get a picture of where we are going, along with the Chinese. And what brought us to this was the fact that the Russians are actually supplying the Chinese with $2 billion worth of military equipment this year. $2 billion.
I sometimes wonder, Ken, if people read the book of Revelation and act it out, or if it's really happening.
You need to go deeper into some other scripture, specifically Daniel. You almost have, Revelation is actually more of a sequel to what we see as Daniel painting happens at the end time. For instance, with Russia, what we have is a federation. You're going to have, this is the lineup, and we're seeing it now. We're seeing Turkey. We're seeing Sudan, of all people. I mean, talk about a kind of a B or C tier player in this. They're loading up with their military. They've become good oil suppliers. They're becoming a rich nation.
Yeah.
And they're investing in military hardware. And we've got the alliance is going to be that is putting itself together in what we are seeing today. And just to lay it out, we're going to see Sudan, Ethiopia, Libya, Russia, Iran, Turkey, Germany, and perhaps a few other outlying parts of the European Union, not the entire European Union. I don't foresee that. And Armenia. They will march against Israel in a surprise attack. We're going to see the United Nations coming out with Security Council resolutions against Israel.
Can you really have a surprise attack nowadays with the kind of technology everybody has?
Yes, because what we're going into is the preemptive strike phase.
Well, when you say surprise attack, I don't think you mean it with men, because you can see troops mass.
You can see the truce mass, and maybe surprise attack kind of shows just coming out of nowhere.
Maybe missiles.
Of course, we have to remember too that we also have some amazing technology now. You know, we can get massive troop deployment, and when you look geographically, the way that these countries are lined out, they're all in these surrounding areas. But what we will see is the United Nations beginning to Security Council resolutions against Israel. And what we're going to see is them using this the same way they're mad at the United States. You know, you went in by yourself.
Mm-hmm,
you
mm-hmm.
didn't wait for us, you know, with this deal. We didn't want you going into Iraq. So now we have a United Nations Security Council resolution, too, for them to get rid of their nuclear bombs, and they're not doing it. So we don't need your permission to go on in. And we see this invasion. But what happens at that point, that will be the last great war of our dispensation.
And when do you think that could happen?
Well, we're seeing the groundwork laid for it right now, with Turkey wanting to go in the European Union. We have Iran, which is that's the other thing, the European Union. The Antichrist actually rises politically out of the European Union, and he negotiates the 7-year peace treaty with Israel, which is the tribulation period, that particular 7 years.
Do you think some political decisions are made based on the Book of Revelation, that politicians see that?
I highly doubt it.
Okay.
They'd have to believe the book in the first place.
Ken, when we come back, I want to talk with you about something that I'm very interested in. That's the possibility of an asteroid or comet strike, and to see if that fits into what the Bible spells out. And also, you've got some thoughts on alien abductions and even the lost continent of Atlantis.
Yes.
We'll talk with you about that when we come back as well. If you need to email me, it's george@coasttocoastam.com, and I shall be right back. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie with our guest Ken Parsons. His website, by the way, is warzonewinner.com, linked up with his name on coasttocoastam.com. Ken, one of the things that concerns me, if you look at the Book of Revelation, to me it seems like a comet or an asteroid is going to get very close to the planet, maybe even hit it. Do you interpret it that way too?
I do, and if I could just preface this with tying down what we were talking about earlier, I just wanted to point out, in a nutshell, what we're going to see is the European Union becoming more involved over in Iraq because of Babylon, which is 20 miles south of Baghdad, which is where they're going to run the new world economic system from.
Interesting.
Plus, Iran is going to be the hot topic this coming year because they have nuclear weapons they had bought from Russia. The challenge is they don't have processing plants, and nuclear weapons have a shelf life. So without these plants to be able to reprocess,
mm-hmm.
Then they'll go old and they won't be any good. So that's what this is all about right now. And this is what's going to spark this whole next thing. So Iran's going to be where to watch.
Now, are these Ken Parsons' predictions, or
this is your
interpretation.
It's what I'm seeing written. It's fairly clear. I mean, once you get the geography straightened out as far as Persia, we can see that there will be this invasion, and we can certainly see the events as they unfold, and some personal contacts that I have in that area we are amassing troops right now along the border of Iraq preparing for something like that. We will not allow them nuclear weapons. They're claiming they have to have nuclear weapons because Israel has them. So, and shifting the heat over there. But irrespective, that's in a nutshell. Let's talk about the comet. I just want to be sure to wrap that up.
I understand. Comets, asteroids, what do you see?
We have some impact situations that are spelled out for us. The thing that we have to look at now is when you look at the news, we see that we've got the Deep Impact Project. Have you followed that?
Yes,
seen it?
I sure have.
That, when we stop and think about it, back when they began to put together the International Space Station, they were... When you look on paper and you look at the countries that are involved in this International Space Station, you're like, what do they have in common?
I know. Plus, we're going to pull out of it pretty soon.
Yeah, and you're looking at this thing. And the reality is, just 1 year later was when they actually went ahead and started beginning the project. They began in 95 to build the International Space Station. In 96 is when they began to plan the project for Deep Impact.
Which is, by the way, to explore a comet's interior by using a spacecraft to create a crater, right?
Yes. Well, they're going to blow it up.
Yep.
And the claim is that we will be able to see this explosion from Earth.
And let's see, the launch date is January 8th of next year, so it's a few weeks away.
Right, and the D-Day is July 4th.
That's interesting.
When they plan to do this.
The
real question is there something that they're not telling us? Is there a possibility of an impact?
Are you saying that maybe this comet is heading this way and they're going to try to divert it?
A couple different things. First of all, it might be a different comet, and this could be like a test run. It could be where if it's successful, you know, then they can let us know that, you know, this is our, it's just weird. I mean, 4th of July, this is our Independence Day. And the other thing is that even if it's not, what about the pieces? Is there a possibility that that could spark the pieces that actually do enter the atmosphere and impact our planet? Is there a possibility that they could accidentally change the course? So even if there is no real impact scenario right now, could they be inadvertently starting one?
Well, that's a good question. They're going to journey, six-month journey to comet Tempel 1, and they're going to try to blast a huge crater into it, which, as you say, could also mean blowing the thing up.
Right. And right here at the same time, they've put up some buildings over in Washington, D.C., in East Potomac Park, that didn't go through any of the normal channels. They didn't go through committee. They just went up, and they won't tell us what they're for. And when asked about it, they said that they couldn't. It was top secret. The only comment that they had, they couldn't tell us what they were doing. The only official comment was, quote, "Let's just say when they're finished, you'll be glad they've done what they've done."
That's what they say?
That's the words exactly. Frederick Lindstrom. That was the quote.
That's kind of scary.
"We can't tell you anything about it, but you'll be glad that they did what they did, that they've done what they've done." So what is this? And it's a whole complex.
And they want to excavate a crater. They want to create a crater 300 feet in diameter by 75 feet deep. That's a pretty big explosion, I would say.
If you can see it from Earth, it's got to be a big explosion.
Yeah, because they've got amateur astronomers. They're telling everybody with telescopes that you may be able to see this explosion.
Well, they're saying with the naked eye.
Really?
Yes. I mean, we've got the articles linked on the website in the archives now. We try to do it, you know, almost daily. But, yeah, they say you can see with the naked eye, which means this is a big explosion. This will be big news.
Oh, yeah. You're right.
This is going to be incredible.
You're right about that. Well, let's talk, though. I'm really concerned about what prophecy says about this.
At the point, of course, there's a rapture, which is simply where people have made a decision to follow the theocratic rule of the universe, you know, that political system that runs the entire thing, will be taken out of the world before this seven-year situation, the tribulation period. But it also happens during a time where there is massive, massive death tolls. We'll have, it looks like, it's some kind of nuclear exchange and asteroid impact. Now, you have to remember that these asteroids, when they enter the atmosphere and explode, they set off warning systems. There are people that when the right asteroid hits, they're under the impression, hey, we're under a nuclear attack. Next thing you know, that tree. So you don't have to have some psycho with an, you know, one his finger on the button, you know, intentionally sending these nukes. They can just simply be under the wrong impression that they're under attack.
Well, that's a good point. As a matter of fact, we've had some pretty close possibilities with accidents already.
Yes, and they're not even big. They just blow up in the atmosphere. I'm talking about something hits the planet. So now you've got massive death toll, you've got massive loss of life, you've got no water, no electricity, millions of people that have just disappeared, you know, with the rapture. It looks like that all happens right about the same time. Many people just think, well, there's this rapture, millions of people are gone, you know, and then we have, you know, there's car wrecks. I mean, it would be bad if they'd just be gone.
Well, the fact that this spaceship is going to get there in 6 months tells me that this comet is going to be pretty darn close, right?
If we can see the explosion from the Earth's surface with the naked eye, it's close.
It's close. Probably closer than most of the planets.
And again, I mean, you have to wonder, what is the scramble to space? You know, what, when you look at, the International Space Station, on paper, you know, these countries have nothing in common, not enough to build a joint, you know, station there. And there's other things, too. I mean, then you have the... You also had the scenario with the aliens.
Tell me about that. What do you mean?
Well, the UFOs are there. I feel I'm a reasonable person. I feel like I've got a lot of credit, but I'm just your normal guy, but educated person. But the reality is, you look up there and they're there. Now, one of my, of course, the personalities I don't get along with are the smug, condescending people. I mean, and you try to, you don't even mention it because they look at you like, you know, that you're just weird. But the reality is, we're seeing them.
Well, this is fascinating, coming from someone who is basically so strongly a student of biblical prophecy. You believe in UFOs.
Well, it's not a matter of believing in them. It's a matter of just acknowledging their presence because they're there.
Do you believe the Bible acknowledges their presence?
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Yes. We've had certain scenarios, again, in the past. In Genesis, in the book of Enoch, Noah's great-grandfather, he wrote an entire book about the time that the fallen angels came down from heaven. Now, you have to remember that the angels are angels. We refer to them as fallen angels simply to kind of let people know we're talking about the ones that are in rebellion. One-third of the angels rebelled against the theocracy. Two-thirds of those particular angels are still in good standing. But there's many classes of angels. God has created many races of beings, you know, over the last trillion years. And he's been a busy creator. And so you have different classes of just angelic beings. In other words, the different shapes and sizes of just the angelic beings. You've got one-third of those that fell away. They came down to the planet and had decided that they were going to try to pollute the human race. Their way of doing that was to have relations with women, and then they had hybrid offspring. So the offspring were a mix between human and angel.
Which could be happening still.
Yes, in that, or again, more specifically, because at that point he wiped out the planet. They were the ones, that's where we got all of our Greek mythology. We call it mythology, but really it's exaggerations of the truth. There were people that did great things, and Neptune, Mars, we go through,
You're not talking about the planets either.
No.
No.
But even Hercules, I mean, his mother was a human. Father was a god.
Which could have been an alien.
Well, or I think we're talking about the same thing. We get hung up on words.
Are you saying an angel is an alien?
I'm saying that they're the same thing.
Okay.
That we are saying,
just
we're talking.
Lay it right out there for us.
Yeah.
Kenneth.
We're talking about the same thing. You know, they would appear to be as aliens, and they're trying to. This time, they're not saying we're gods like they did last time. This time, they're saying we're aliens from another planet.
Why is this Jacques Vallée would say, messengers of deception?
Yes, but the question that you have to ask yourself is, what would they be trying to
deceive us from?
Yeah, I mean, what is their motivation? And the reality is, what if we're talking about at the end of the tribulation, God himself comes back to this planet, or the creator of the universe returns to this planet? How in the world do you get mankind to take up arms and literally try to battle the creator who's coming back? They're God. The only way is to deceive them. So, and we know that there's different races of these aliens. It would appear as though that perhaps that they have made some contact with our government. I mean, we know about the crashes and things like this.
There are a lot of people who believe that. As a matter of fact, I had a couple guests on last week who are convinced that that has already happened, that there's been contact with our government and others too.
So the question is, are they claiming that we have something to fear from another race of aliens who want to attack us, but they're our friends, and they want to prepare us for another alien race that's coming to attack the Earth?
All right, so what you're saying, if I get your drift, is that when prophecy was written and stories were written, what these Earthlings, these authors, witnessed were real events, but they were either misinterpreted or we've misinterpreted what they were talking about. When we talk about, you know, angelic things coming down to this planet, what they saw might have been physical alien beings from other worlds.
No, they saw fallen angels.
All right, but what do you mean by a fallen angel?
Well, the angel, in other words, I'm make this as specific as I can. At the end of the day, what you're looking at here, in its true essence, is an angel that rebelled against God. He's a fallen angel. But now what he tells you he is could be something completely different. They came and tried telling mankind back in Genesis that they were gods. This time, they're telling us that they're from another planet.
I see what you mean.
So they're deceiving as far as who they are and where they come from.
Why have they changed their story?
I believe that it has to do with trying to get mankind to take up arms against God when he returns. In other words, if they can convince us that this is some alien force coming to the planet, then we will try to defend ourselves against it.
Well, but if there's a godly thing coming to this planet, no weapons in the world are going to stop that, right?
Oh, and it won't. But Satan, who is the father of lies, is under the impression that somehow he really can win this thing.
So,
you know, where we make the mistake is when we... Religion has come along over the years and kind of has given a stigma to this, you know, to the God and angels and, you know, this real dreamy and wings and halos and this sort of thing. Like, it's just some place with disembodied, you know, spirits floating around.
And that may be the case in some issues, don't you think?
No, I don't. I think it's a very real place. I don't think there's really a difference between when we define, we categorize things.
I mean, you believe, Ken, that there are good angels, like guardian angels?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
well,
all right.
We have contact with them, and we don't even know it.
Right.
Which means they can appear to look like us, and they're physical. You can touch them.
Okay.
You wouldn't even know that they were an angel.
Yet throughout this whole exercise, there were some who were pretty bad creatures.
Extremely bad. Extremely bad, and they still are.
And you think they're all part of this revelation prophecy?
It would appear that they are, especially when we start looking at the Antichrist himself. I mean, there's more people that are just involved in... just an antichrist. I mean, there's the first beast, and then a second beast comes along and then convinces the world to worship the first beast. Then you have the dragon who comes. And what do these aliens look like?
Who knows? They could be reptilian, right?
Exactly. But they say now this dragon comes and gives his power to the antichrist so that he can work great miracles, and then he calls fire down from heaven. He's not God, so how would you do that?
Fire from heaven could be an asteroid smashing into the planet.
Well, he's showing a miracle, though.
Oh.
He's, you know, I'm going to call fire down from, probably just comes from a craft.
Oh, that could be, too. Could be a beam.
Could be. Could be.
Interesting.
But we begin to see, especially when we look at China, who, again, we talked about their relations with Russia now,
mm-hmm.
the military engagement. We have to remember, what is their ancestors? Comes from the symbolic, the dragons. You know, dragons are everywhere.
I want to talk with you when we come back, Ken, about alien abductions, because you've got a theory about mass abductions, and then you've also got some thoughts about Atlantis as well. How long did you study this?
Like I said, I've been doing this like 8 years old. It just I had three older sisters. The youngest sister was 10 years older than me.
What do other people say about your theories?
It's amazing that they have taken to the teachings so well, because they have walked away from hearing most of the stuff. They'll hear interesting things, and this could be the mark of the beast, this could be this could be that, but not this is going to happen, then this is going to happen, then this is going to happen. That's really where I come in.
I got behind a car yesterday with out-of-state plates, and their first three numbers were 666, and I got to tell you, I purposely pulled away from that car. I'll be back with you in a moment, Ken, with lots more to talk about. Later on, we'll open up the phone lines as well. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. Ken Parsons, our guest. I'm George Norrie. And, of course, welcome back to Coast AM. What do you think is behind the alien abductions phenomenon?
Well, first, I'm right in the middle of listing a Pop-Tart with your picture on it on eBay.
How much is this one up to?
I'm hoping to get 10 grand out of it.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
I can't. If that guy's real, whoever bids that kind of money for that, I've got to invite him on the show.
Yes, you do.
My gosh.
And sell him some stuff.
Yeah, really.
And
I'll give him some T-shirts I've worn and things like that. He'll buy anything after that.
Huh? Toothbrush.
Yeah.
The abductions are, as far as mass abductions, that will be what will be said about the rapture. In other words, once millions of people are missing, you know, those that are not going to want to say, you know, it was God, it was the Creator, and He came, and He literally got those believers and took them out of the way before this happens, according to what the Bible says.
Now, that is an interesting theory. I never thought of it like that. I've always wondered, Ken, when I was a kid, you know, how could all these people just disappear? Now, if you equate alien abductions to this, and maybe they get beamed up, who knows how they're going to do this? Now, that's interesting.
And one of two things will be said. Either if the government is working with what they believe to be aliens from another planet, then it will be one of two things. Either those claiming to be aliens will say, well, we took them out of the way because they were inhibiting mankind from reaching its full potential in unity, or they'll say that it was this other alien race that will be attacking us that took us, and that's just more reason for us to prepare for this alien invasion that's coming.
Now, what was the number? 144,000 would be taken?
No, that would be the number of the moment that the rapture occurs. You have to remember that the Jewish faith is based entirely on the Messiah. There are so many messianic Jews that it's ridiculous. I mean, people think, well, you know, Jewish.
Well, I wouldn't use the word it's ridiculous.
Well, I mean,
I know what you mean.
It's ridiculous that people don't understand how many there are.
Okay.
Is what
All
I
right.
meant.
All right.
Because there's tons. Because everything they do is symbolic of the Messiah. So, that being the case, when the moment the rapture occurs, there will be 144,000 Jewish people that immediately accept Jesus as their Messiah, because they had heard about the rapture, they had heard about all these things, and God says He has 144,000. So once all of the people that are saved are gone, then immediately the very first evangelists for the tribulation will be 144,000 Jewish evangelists that accepts Jesus as the Messiah that they had been waiting for.
Now, are those the ones that you're saying would be abducted?
No. They will. It just simply means that the people that are taking the rapture will be everywhere. There will just be millions of us. But as soon as that happens, then somebody has to go out and still continue to explain to people what is happening and to warn them that this is a deception. And the first ones will be the 144,000 Jewish people who at that point get saved. And it's like downloading everything about the Bible because they've got it memorized. I mean, it's not like they would have to go through, you know, training and try to learn everything. I mean, it's just they know more than any Gentile Christian who's been saved for 30 years and studies every day still isn't going to know as much.
Now, those that get taken, where are they taken?
To heaven with God.
Okay, so you don't see anything. You don't see anything sinister.
No, they'll say that that's what happened to explain it to the people that are left here.
That they were abducted by aliens.
Right. And to try to explain, you know, what, you know, how that had actually happened.
Okay. They don't want to explain it away as something mystical or spiritual.
It's the equivalent to if we're going to invade a country, if we're going to war, the first thing we do is we take our people out of the embassies.
Well, yeah, we protect them.
Yeah. And so he removes us before, you know, this all of this judgment comes on the earth during that last 7 years. The good thing is, this is the path to world peace. World peace gets here after that 7 years period of time.
It's
not going to come without a cost.
I want to read some of the past prophecies of one of my former guests, Father Andrew Wingate, and get your take on that, and then we'll talk a little bit about Atlantis, okay?
Okay.
He foresees four major upcoming acts of terrorism, with two events happening in the U.S. before the elections. That didn't happen. He said one would take place in the southern U.S. involving a national treasure. The other would be along the border. Anything in the prophecy about terrorism?
Other than what terrorism is really doing is it's creating an infrastructure where government can keep an eye on people and actually pick people out of a crowd, because it used to be, and we can't go to war against a country. Once they decide that we're going to go get Christians, we're going to go get Muslims, or whatever it is that they decide, this is simply creating that infrastructure so that they can do so. It's a vehicle that they can use. We're practicing. We're putting together
the playbook?
Yeah. Everything that we need.
Interesting.
You know, yeah, your papers, please.
All right, next one. He says that, talking about the Antichrist, he calls, as some people have, the Maitreya. Have you heard of him?
No.
All right. During his rise to power, he will kill the world leaders gathered at the United Nations by detonating a nuclear bomb that is built into the structure already. Yeah, that's pretty prophetic. Do you believe that?
No.
All right. 10 months after an invasion, he says, the U.S. will be invaded by communists, and primarily through Florida. He says that there will be a great miracle that will take place where pillars of fire will be seen at multiple locations around the world. What's your take on that one?
Yeah, I have no official position. I don't see it.
Large tsunamis hitting the coasts.
Well, that'll happen. I mean, those are going to happen anyway. You know, especially if we do have an impact and those things hit in the ocean, you know, you'll have tsunamis to beat all tsunamis. So, but as far as saying, you know, that's going to happen this year or, you know, before any particular date, you know, that can't happen. I mean, these would just be just sporadic events. Now, think of like 9/11. You know, that was, you know, saying, are we going to have another 9/11? You know, that's really anybody's guess.
Yeah. But you don't see that in prophecy.
No. America, well, it depends. America really isn't here during this 7 year period of time. We're gone. Or the government that we know today will no longer be in effect.
What happens to it?
We're taken out of the way. It shows that God has a specific purpose for America. Now you have, I know there's a lot of people that say, oh, but America is so sinful, you know, it's Babylon, it's this, that, and the other. We can't confuse the fact that there are splinter groups, there are factions. In other words, well, they knew about 9/11. Well, some did knew about 9/11. The question is, did all of them know about 9/11? I mean, I tend not to believe that. We have to remember that the president is just not aware of every little thing that happens. Now, the thing is about George Bush.
I wouldn't call it a little thing.
Well, I'm saying that he is not. There's people that would blame him for a robbery at a grocery store. You know, where was George Bush on that one? But the reality is, he doesn't. The president has a lot of input. He's got a lot of pull. I mean, he's got a lot of purpose. But as far as him knowing absolutely everything,
I know what you're saying, and I would agree with, is that there are others who could be pulling his strings.
Well, there's others that would like to pull the strings. That might have been the case more with his father, I think. He was really heavy in the New World Order.
Well, don't you believe there's a higher group than a president?
Yeah. I think there's just people with a lot of... again, with just a lot of power. There's just a whole lot of people with a whole lot of power. But as far as saying there's one group running everything, I don't see that. I see that will be the case eventually.
And they're working toward it.
Oh, yeah, they're working toward it. And they're putting together the vehicle in which they'll use to be able to accomplish that. But as far as some people knew about 9/11, and I think had the reasons for wanting to let that happen.
Yeah.
We saw that, you know, with the Patriot Act. We're going through it again with the Patriot Act too. You know, Bush does things that I don't care for. You know, he's the New Freedom Initiative really irked me.
Mm-hmm.
The mandatory psychological screening for all the kids. That's the other thing that we have in Revelation. It makes a comment that it says that the people do not repent of their... Now, we see the word translated as witchcraft, but in the Greek, the word itself is pharmakia. It says that they don't repent of their, actually, it's saying their pharmaceutical drug usage.
Yeah, really.
So we're having a serious problem with that. One of the biggest drug companies out there, its name is pharmakia.
Yep. Pharmacia, actually.
Pharmacia. But well, pharmakia close. Would be your Greek word. Yeah. You might say,
yeah,
pharmacia.
Oh, Nostradamus would call it like that.
Yeah.
And that would be close. Let me ask you a little bit about 666, the sign of the beast. What do you think that is?
The beast, he will be a political leader that comes out of the European Union. You know, who specifically that is at this point, I don't know. Now, the 666, it says, let him who has wisdom calculate the number of the beast, meaning it won't just be the sign isn't just going to be a 666. There will have to be some formula that calculates that 666.
Yeah, I mean, do you think 666 represents, for example, implanted chips in our hand with codes and stuff like that?
They believe, well, again, there's, now, you know, when we take the word computer and we take the multiples of six, in other words, the words, the letter C would
yeah.
be six, O would be 12, M would be 18, and we put its equivalent all the way through the word itself, add those together, they add up to 666.
Hmm.
The interesting thing is the computer is an American word. It's the same in all languages. So it wouldn't change from language to language.
Right, it would be 666 everywhere.
Right. But what we're really seeing there is your Internet access. We have the point where ultimately that we cannot buy or sell unless we are able to move over the Internet, because there won't be any paper money. You know, it's a cashless society.
See, that's the part of prophecy that astounds me, because that sounds exactly to what's going to be happening, to be sure. I mean, I'm sure we're going to have a cashless society. We're going to have a number, whether it's implanted in us or not, that we use in order to buy goods and services. Without it, you're not going to be able to buy goods and services, like a Social Security card. I mean, without that number, Ken, you can't get a job in this country.
That's right. It'll be your citizenship.
Yep.
It'll be your world citizenship. And to be outside of that would be...
And, you know, people who say, well, I'm not going to use that number. I'm not going to take it. They can't force me. look, people are using their Social Security number when they get a job, and I don't hear anybody objecting to giving a Social Security number because they know they need to work. People will fall in the line.
I don't remember one person getting their new driver's license and going, what's this magnetic strip on the back?
I don't want it in there.
You know, I noticed it, but I mean, it wasn't any real big, you know, backlash.
No, these things are just going to happen, and everybody's going to agree with it because that's just the way it's going to be. The question is how can that be, tell me how that can be bad. The fact that if you go through a checkout line, you hold up your hand, and you're done. You just walk out. Everything's recorded.
If it was just the technology, there wouldn't be anything bad about it. But in order to be a partaker in that technology, you will have to pledge allegiance to this world political leader or this world political organization. You will, in essence, give up your freedom. You will, in essence, have to renounce any other religion.
Well, that comes sooner or later when you get your number. Probably
later. It'll be at that point. It will be right then.
Don't you think?
That'll be your reason for getting that number because, again, it will be your personal identification. It'll be the way that you get on the Internet. It will be the way that you...
But they'll make it sound good in the beginning, right? They're going to make it sound like it's fun, it's easy,
we all need
it.
Well, sure. Could you imagine if 9/11 had occurred, if everybody had had a chip with a global positioning satellite, how many people we could have saved?
That's true.
That'll be the thought process. You know, we have dogs that are found 5 miles away lost because they had the chip in them. We're putting them in kids. It's going to be knowing where everybody is all of the time. We've got the digital angel, so if your car gets stuck, we'll know right where you're at. You know, if you have a heart attack, we'll be able to find you. We'll know. And it's security-based. And the reality is, our framers, you know, it was give me liberty or give me death. And it was like, I don't want my freedom taken away. Now, if I get killed on the way to Walmart in a terrorist attack, at least I died a free man. I had the liberty to decide to go to Walmart. But what kind of a life is it if under the security, you know, pretense we're going to keep you safe and I'm stuck in my house under martial law, which is exactly what happens, you know, if there is an imminent attack, if there is an attack again, and our kids are in school, you can't get those kids. You cannot go get your own kid out of that school the moment that that alert goes all the way to red.
You can't do it.
Can't do it. I even double checked it with where my kids go. I said, by the way, if you go to red alert and there's an actual terrorist attack, how do I get my kids? They said, you don't. Not until the government tells us it's okay.
So they stay in
school? They're locked in the school. Total lockdown.
And what about you? Where are you locked? Or can you...
We're not even supposed to go out on the road if that happens. We're not supposed to travel. They say that if you're on the road, you'll be treated as the enemy. It's a fear-driven society now. That's the thing. It's so sad.
Can any of this be stopped, or is prophecy just exactly what it is?
It can be delayed. A matter of fact, there's one point in Revelation where the angel says that there will be no more delays, meaning there have been some delays up until now. I believe there's times that God may have the plan and then just, you know, there's a delay for some reason. We saw back in 1982 when the Russians had built tunnels in towards Israel, and they found the AK-47s and the Russian military uniforms with no insignias, and then they found all kinds of rations there, but the rations only had a six-month shelf life, meaning that these tunnels where this invasion had been planned going through Lebanon, when Israel attacked Lebanon, because they're firing missiles over there, and they stumbled across these tunnels, then that actually, at that point, delayed what we see as the Magog invasion or the Russian invasion into Israel. So that has happened before.
All right, but to review now, while we come up to the end of this half hour, you see one of the most pressing threats for us is this deep impact mission to a comet, which is going to be launched in January.
I wouldn't call it pressing. I would call it compelling.
What's the difference?
I think it's an interesting
You don't see that.
I don't see a piece of this asteroid, plummeting into the Earth.
You don't.
48 hours after they do this, it could happen. But what we do know is that there are asteroid impacts. We have one that hits in the ocean and kills a third of the sea life or the ocean life.
Is that Wormwood?
It's one of them. Yeah. Yeah, we've got like three of them in a row that hit.
All right, when we come back, let's take some fast blast questions for you, Ken. And also, I do want to get into Atlantis because you've got some thoughts on that. Of course, according to Sylvia Brown, I was an Atlantean in a former life. I'm George Norrie. I'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Ken's website is warzonewinner.com. And welcome back to Coast, Ken Parsons, our guest tonight. Ken, let's talk a little bit about Atlantis before we take some fast blast questions for you. What's your thoughts on that with prophecy?
That's a fascinating topic. And Fox News had reported about a week ago that they had gotten some footage from beneath the Mediterranean Sea that shows where there was some walls, and it looks as though there was a city under there.
Mm-hmm.
They were speculating that may have been Atlantis. That's consistent, because before the flood, we have to remember that it had never rained upon the earth before the Noah's Ark. And at that time, the face of the earth was different. In other words, we had a canopy of water around the planet, almost like a bubble that protected us at that point. It was that canopy that collapsed, as well as the breaking up of the springs of the deep, which that's how the earth was watered. It was almost like a greenhouse effect. And at the point that all of this happened is when we actually got some of these seas, like the Mediterranean Sea and the Black Sea. The description of where the Garden of Eden is leads you directly to the bottom of the Black Sea, meaning that if they really want to see some good archaeology, we've already gotten some from up closer to the shores. And the artifacts that they have gotten out of there actually predate what we find in the Fertile Crescent, which is where before we were thinking where we had come from. But actually, there's even older remnants of society down lower. And I believe that if they were actually to go beneath the surface of the Black Sea, they would find it. The other thing is that it says that there was cherubim placed at the entrance of the Garden of Eden to keep people from going in. In other words, there was just one way in and one way out. So it would have been a valley. It would have been surrounded by high regions. I mean, there would not have been a way to get in there other than through this one way. But that being the case, you see the Mediterranean Sea is just right next to the Black Sea. So society would have naturally grown from that area and began to move around. There's an entire society that was here, an entire race of people before the fall of Adam. And it wasn't just Adam and Eve. If we really invest attention in the scripture, we see, for one thing, we see that one of the responses to when Eve had eaten from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil was that I'm going to increase the pain of childbearing, meaning she'd been bearing children. Or he could have increased it. So they had already had society. And you'll also notice that the genealogy, Cain and Abel, it's the written account of Adam's line, or the account of the fallen.
Where do you think Atlantis really might have been? I mean, Edgar Casey says it could have been in the Bimini's.
I think that it very well could be at the bottom of the Mediterranean. It's right over there by Greece.
All right.
I think it very well could be, and I think that makes sense. And they would have been an incredible society, because again, it was a superior race at that time before the fall.
Here's a fast blast question for you. It says, Mr. Parsons, did you know that Chernobyl is Russian for wormwood?
Yeah.
Now that's interesting.
Yeah, that's amazing. I had in my class a young lady from Russia. And we had even talked about that. Yeah, it's translated from the Greek into Russian. It is Chernobyl, or Wormwood.
Another one from Deb in Oklahoma. Do you see Osama bin Laden fitting into prophecy at all?
Yes, he believes himself to be the Al-Mahdi, which is the Islamic Messiah, if you want to put it like that. In other words, they believe that he is the one that is going to bring Islam to its rightful place, you know, as leader over the planet. They have their own eschatology. Islam, they've got their own Antichrist. They even incorporate Jesus himself. I mean, their take's a little different. They are under the impression that he had never actually died on the cross, that he was simply taken to heaven because he had said that he was the Son of God, and therefore he had done something wrong, and that he's being corrected for it, and that at the end of the tribulation, then God's going to send him back, and he's going to tell everybody that he was wrong, that he wasn't the Son of God, and then ultimately kill all the Christians and Jews, and it will be just the Muslims left. So they've got this whole eschatological chain of events, but they personally believe that Osama bin Laden is the Mahdi. And, of course, their Antichrist is called the Dajjal.
Gary from Toledo wants you to elaborate again on the United States, its role in end times in this scenario, if you would.
Paul talks about a country that would one day be on the planet, a political structure that would derive its power from its own people, and that it would be a constitutional power, and that the Antichrist would be incapable of rising because this one power by themselves in the world, without the help of the rest of the world, would be taking on police actions, and that would be actually taking matters into their own hands against the will of the rest of the world, and that it would be this type of military activity that would keep the Antichrist from being able to rise to power. But that this country, that this the government of the particular country would be removed, and then at that point the Antichrist could go ahead and rise to prominence, which would be during the tribulation period, which means America would the government as we know it would not be enforced, would not be in existence during the tribulation. It will be a non-event.
Do you see any earth changes in Revelation?
Yeah, massive earthquakes, mountains disappearing. You know, we know that the impact of the nuclear weapons themselves and the impact of the asteroids as they hit, all of this, you know, the poisoning of waters, the burning up of grass, there will be a lot. We also see in Revelation description of modern day technology. For instance, the non-lethal technology. We see an entire event where basically helicopters equipped with non-lethal technology are using this technology on the people because, of course, life becomes valuable at this point. I mean, we're going to need people. There's been massive loss of life in this one scenario. And so they are using non-lethal technology for crowd control. And it says that the people themselves will hurt so bad that they'll wish that they could die, but they won't. And the weapons would hurt the people, but it wouldn't hurt any of the grass or any of the ecosystem.
Interesting. You have a different kind of view about Revelation. Yours is pretty different than most.
Well, again, most of the Revelation and Daniel or prophetic teachings came from a time a while back and was never really revisited, I don't think. And we turn it into a doctrine. We have a tendency to do that. It's the spirit of religion. We pretty much, this is how our grandfather preached it from the pulpit. That's the way it is. And you don't come out and all of a sudden say that, well, that might not be exactly correct. But again, we all have to admit, I just want answers. I want the truth. I want the truth, and I'm willing to seek it out, and I'm willing to investigate, and I'm willing to pray and do all those things that I feel like necessary just to really know what's going on and to not question. And I'm not right about everything. I feel like I'm right about most things, but there are things that I don't know. I'll revisit this if this entire scenario is still going on in another 5 years, if we're still here And I'll be reinvestigating. I'll be updating, making sure that there's not something that we might be able to be aware of, some new technology that, just like the Internet, we couldn't have seen that before 95. I couldn't have. Yet there it is, you know, a full description of a worldwide economic system where, you know, where all the rulers of the earth are getting rich, you know, through the, you know, through this one system. And we see that it would be run from where Babylon is now. They'll actually run the world economic system. They'll control the Internet, and they'll do it from Babylon. That couldn't have happened while Saddam Hussein was in control, but that area has been freed up now. And what we're going to see is, again, the European Union becoming more prominent. Wouldn't be surprised to see the United Nations actually move there. They themselves are decreasing in prominence, will continue to do so, but the European Union will effectively be able to use the United Nations structure as a vehicle to go ahead and employ their will around the world. And we're seeing that right now. I mean, they're going to increase the Security Council from 15 to 24. We're going to have all these new seats that we can put European Union members in. The same way that we were under the impression that we would have an edge by having the United Nations here at one point, and a lot of the world said that they're just using the United Nations to, you know, impose their will. You know, they think that they are the United Nations. Well, you know, it's not working for us. You know, most of them are against America at this point. We've got countries that are some of the most abusive human rights countries on the planet, on the Human Rights Commission over there. But we will see the European Union come in. They will rescue the United Nations, but then they will basically be able to use that system and that structure in itself to be able to exert authority around the world.
See, I still don't understand why we even permit the United Nations to stay here in New York. I think it needs to go to some neutral country.
It's coming. I mean, they're wanting some land to build a new place. They say that theirs is, it's falling apart, it's becoming decrepit, and we're saying no, you know, it's not going to happen, and you know, we're not getting along with them. We have TV commercials that are being run talking about, you know, just really, you know, hitting hard on the UN. We just don't want them here anymore. They're a pain in the neck. I mean, especially when you look at all the people that are over here from other countries that are not, that have immunity from our laws.
Every generation seems to claim that they're at end times. Every generation. Why is that?
Well, again, it's because of a lack of knowledge. For one thing, like during Hitler, that couldn't have, you know, yeah, he, a lot of it looked that way, but without a nation of Israel, that couldn't have happened. So the prophetic clock didn't start ticking again until 1947, when Israel became a nation. That was the point when all of a sudden the prophetic clock started to tick again. And we have seen since then, I mean, right down the fact, we know that the Jewish temple has to be rebuilt during the tribulation. The question has always been, well, you know, with the Mosque of Omar right there on the Temple Mount, how in the world are we going to be able to, are the Jews going to be able to build a temple?
Now, are we talking about rebuilding it physically or spiritually?
Yes. No, physically. They have already cloned a red heifer. The red heifer was, for all intents and purposes, extinct. They have a red heifer ready to go. They've gone to the Pope. They had a group of them that went to the Pope looking for the menorah. They thought that the Catholics had it in their possession, wanting some of the artifacts from the original temple. They even, just this last week, they reinstituted the Sanhedrin. They have not been a group since 1,500 years ago. The Sanhedrin was the ruling spiritual authority. They were the ones that actually put Christ on trial. And they had broken up and have not been an active group for 1,500 years. And they have just reinstituted themselves over this last week.
You mean they're back?
Yes. The Sanhedrin is back.
Interesting. If everything that you say comes about, and you say in some cases we're in it now, give me a timetable, though, Ken, a real timetable that we're going to see some real action here.
I would say over the next year that perhaps we will, and this is barring, any other delay, But it's really looking like the next year we will see a focus on Iran that will become more heated. We'll see the European Union is also taking over the peace process as it pertains to Israel and the Arab states as of next year. It won't be America spearheading that anymore. That will be the European Union. The European Union are the ones that went in and have been negotiating with Iran over the nuclear weapons situation. That has not been America. They are effectively on all kinds of different levels taking the place that at another time we would have been actually in there working ourselves. But instead, they're taking over a lot of this. They're rising in stature. They've got their own military now. We're going to see the European Union come on strong. We're going to see China come on strong. We will see Russia again and China together combine their resources. We will continue to see that. We're going to see this one, the countries that we had talked about earlier, we're going to begin to see heavily them line up. We'll be seeing, again, you're going to have Russia, we're going to have Armenia, Iran, Turkey. That's the big thing, Turkey trying to get membership into the European Union.
Yeah, well, they're on our side right now, aren't they?
Turkey?
Yeah.
They're,
they've let us use it, we've had bases there.
They want to be European Union. You know, they're the most accessible, at least to that type of a mindset, but they still have a heavy Muslim population. As a matter of fact, they had even warned earlier this week, they told the EU that that the EU risked terrorist attacks if they don't let Turkey in.
Hmm.
But Turkey's going to be more lined up again, ultimately, with Russia. It all comes down to Israel. That's the proverbial ball. You don't want to take your eye off the ball.
You mean in terms of seeing things happen?
Yeah, that is the nexus. It is the epicenter, Israel itself. I mean, it's such a small, little, tiny country. You know what I'm saying? And Jerusalem itself is just so many acres.
Well,
I mean, and the whole world revolves around it.
It's what prophecy said.
Yes. Why not the Kurds? I mean, why aren't we having, you know, a road map to peace for them? You know, and all these other people. I mean, how about, why don't we just give back our land, the land here, to the American Indians?
I'm interested why you didn't know of the Maitreya when so many people think that is indeed the Antichrist. Why is that?
I don't believe it's the Antichrist. The Antichrist is going to be a political leader out of the European Union.
All right.
Is the Maitreya European Union leader?
No, he's Pakistani, Middle Eastern. He is living in London, and he is. It's been claimed that he has an office at the United Nations building, but nobody's proven that yet. And he is not a European leader by any means. He's not a politico at all.
Exactly, and that's what, and of course, he wouldn't have to exactly be in politics yet, but it would be necessary for him to come out of the European Union. The Antichrist comes out of that last world order that Daniel saw, the revived Roman Empire.
As a leader of the Union?
Yes, he will be a political leader. He will rise through the ranks and then take over as the ultimate in charge. At one point.
When we come back, Ken, would you like to take some phone calls from people?
Fantastic. I'd love it.
We'll do that. Anything specifically you're looking for in terms of questions or free-flowing here?
Free-flowing. The whole gamut.
You got it. We shall do that with our guest, Ken Parsons. If you haven't been up to his website yet, it's warzonewinner.com. It's already linked up right under his name at coasttocoastam.com. And by the way, you get a moment, just scroll down there and take a look at some of the hot stories of the day that Lex has posted. And don't forget, also on Tuesday, 8 o'clock Pacific time, 11 p.m. Eastern time, those of you at WABC land, for Streamlink members, we'll have our one-hour chat. I'll sit down and answer your questions. Back in a moment. And welcome back. Ken Parsons, our guest, and your phone calls. And let's go right to these calls in a second here, Ken. If we would, let's get a little quick recap, if you can. You believe that angels may indeed be aliens, correct?
that they are that the fallen angels are presenting themselves as though they are aliens from another planet
for some deceptional purpose.
Right.
Okay. Next up, let's go to our wild card line. Get us started. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Dave from Manhattan.
Hi, Dave. Go ahead.
Yeah, you guys were talking about Maitreya,
mm-hmm.
Being the Antichrist. In Buddhism, Maitreya is kind of like the second coming of Jesus Christ. He's kind of like the loving one that's, you know, that's coming. And there's a guy, you know, creeping around the New Age scene that calls himself Maitreya. I've seen him at a couple of gatherings, and you know, I don't know what that's all about. But anyway, the term Maitreya is a Sanskrit term, and it means the loving one. It's like the next Buddha. You know,
His representative's been on the show a couple times. His name's Benjamin Krem, and he, though a lot of people think he's pretty creepy, says exactly what you say, that he is indeed the second coming.
Yeah, I'm an ordained Buddhist monk, and I've seen these people around the scene, you know, kind of like the New Age spiritual scene, and they are a little creepy, but, you know, but anyway, the belief is that the next coming Buddha is Maitreya, and, you know, he's kind of like the next coming of Jesus Christ to the Buddhist, you know, kind of, you know, they may have robbed his name or something, but
right.
He's a cool being.
Okay, thanks.
Hey, you're welcome.
Appreciate it. The one thing I want to ask you, Ken, is at the end times, some people say that's a good thing. What do you say?
It is a good thing for those that have made the correct decision as far as what side to follow. That's the thing. We live in an age where we try to teach our kids not to compete because somebody might get their feelings hurt, don't keep score at ball games and things of this nature. And the reality is, life is not about neutrality. Life is about choices. There are decisions to be made. We've paid serious prices in our own history for appeasing certain people, certain nations, just like Hitler. When we look at how all that came about, but ultimately, we must choose a side, and that's where it's going to be harder. Our knowledge of the Bible and our faith is what will guide us, and that's really what it's all about. And really, being here on Earth, and let's not confuse, or we shouldn't confuse, life and death with existence. See, nothing God creates ever ceases to exist. None of us cease to exist. I mean, that's our carnal language that we use, life and death, and it seems to be the, you know, death is the final, ultimate thing, and life is, you know, when your physical heart is beating. But the reality is, our existence goes on forever. It's just where it goes on.
Would you consider yourself prophetic?
Yeah. It is a gift. It's something that God might reveal to me under certain circumstances.
I mean, are you like Nostradamus was?
No.
All right.
No, you don't just walk around and turn it on and turn it off. And the thing is, if you predict enough stuff, you know, some of it's bound to end up being right. But when you weigh it against the stuff that was wrong, you know, it's way out of balance.
West of the Rockies, you're on with us. Hi there.
Hello.
And where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Lane County in Oregon.
Okay, go ahead.
And I have a question. I know the scripture talks about there being a rapture, but there's also talk of those being put to the sword and being in persecution. So my question is, from what makes sense to me, are those that weren't holy enough to make the rapture, then of course they understand and they then are put into persecution?
There's no such thing as not being holy enough. That's the whole thing. It's not through any act. What we're seeing there are people that it's a free gift. It's a pardon for all the crimes you might have committed against the theocracy or sin. And once that's done, you see, I personally have never committed any righteousness. But now, when Messiah was here on the planet, he never committed any sin, but when he went to the cross, he became sin.
Yes.
And so, since I never committed any righteousness, but I became righteous as a free gift. And that's how he sees us, irrespective what we might see as an imperfection and things like this. So it doesn't have to do with how holy you are. It simply has to do, did you get this free gift? Did you accept this pardon? It's not a pardon that you lobby for, you don't pay for it, you don't have to have the right contacts. It's something that, that's given to anybody who will receive it, who will choose to take that route. But what we're seeing in the tribulation are those people who made the decision after the rapture.
I see.
That have entered into the tribulation period, and there will be quite a few.
Yeah.
So, you know, they've heard it from their mom, they've heard it from their sister, they heard the radio show, you know, a few times, and, you know, Ken was always talking about this rapture thing, and now all of a sudden I wake up, you know, half my family's disappeared and the other half is still here. And then ultimately they think at that point, wow, I have to make this decision, because then they look out the window and find out that, you know, here comes the global government the same way, and they can't buy the food at the Walmart until they go ahead and accept their new citizenship and get their mark. I got an interesting question just a little earlier that had to do with, you know, well, you know, if the mark looks so good, or the fact, you know, that you get this chip, and if you're in a terrorist attack, they can find you. If you get Alzheimer's and wander off, they can find you. If it looks so good, how do I know whether or not this is just a good thing, or if it's this mark of the beast? Well, you'll know if the condition for receiving this chip, which again contains internet access, and I can't say enough about that, because ultimately TV, everything will come through this internet. If you can't get on the internet, you are a non-event on this planet. But if it is a conditional thing to get this mark, that you have to give your allegiance to this world leader, or your allegiance to this government, or that is your citizenship. With no chip, you cannot be a citizen. And if you have to renounce any of the other religions, then that's your clue. That is the mark that you should not take.
Let's go east of the Rockies. Welcome to Coast to Coast. Your turn. Hi.
Hi, it's Jeff in Pennsylvania.
Hey, Jeff. Go ahead.
Great show, by the way. I have an item I'd like a response to, and hopefully you can help me with this. My understanding of the rapture is that basically when Christ was asked where the people went, he said, look where the eagles are. And the translation of the word eagle is vulture.
Right, yeah, absolutely.
Which suggests that their bones are being picked and they're dead.
Well, no, again, and I'm really glad that you brought this up, because a lot of times, you know, they'll talk about, you know, two will be at the mill, you know, one will be grinding at the mill, you know, one will be taken, the other left, two will be in a bed, one will be taken, the other left. And they said, where? And he said, where? But the words were, wherever the bodies are, there will the vultures be. And when we put that along with what else we see, with what Paul had said in Thessalonians and the other references that we have in Corinthians about this rapture, is that is the key, that it's not just the rapture itself, that there's some other event that is causing catastrophic loss of life. It's not just people disappearing, but also many bodies left, which fits in, again, when we go into the other areas that we see with the, again, nuclear exchanges, wars. And I can't say enough, I mean, the nuclear exchange may not just be some, you know, some lunatic out there. It could literally be just one of the warning systems set off by the right-sized asteroid exploding, or actually in hitting the planet, just like China today. If that had been any bigger, there's a chance that they might have believed that they were, I mean, they were already thinking UFO.
Yeah.
They could have been under the impression they were under nuclear attack and just started firing missiles.
You're talking about that explosion over one of their cities.
Right.
Which nobody knows what it was. Probably a meteorite, but who knows?
Right. I'm guessing it probably was, especially with the meteor shower today.
Yes.
Probably just an abnormally large one.
Let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Howdy.
Hi.
My name's Ralph, and I just had a few things to say, and I'd like to get your opinion on them. One thing is, and Jeremiah talked about when Christ comes back, he's going to probably be at the Battle of Armageddon and land on Mount Carmel, and all the dead shall rise first, and the living shall rise with him, and meet him up in the air, and then I was under the impression that we would go to the Battle of Armageddon. And then also in Revelation chapter 20, it talks about that those that didn't take the mark and those that were beheaded for their testimony of our Lord, that they were raised again from the dead. And then right after that it says, and this is the first resurrection. And not only that, but then all those people that are saved and then raptured out, according to what you say, does that mean that everybody else that gets saved doesn't get to go to the wedding feast of the Lord? And not only that, but, you know, doesn't the Lord reign on the earth for 1,000 years when he comes back?
Yes. Yeah, all that.
So that's why I was wondering why all these churches are teaching that we'll be raptured out before the tribulation, because when the Lord comes back, the people of Jerusalem are going to, that's how they're going to know that he is the Messiah, is they're going to say, Lord, where did you get these wounds? And he's going to say, in the house of my friends, and they're going to repent right then. And then, you know,
I guess I'm missing the, I might have misunderstood. I know that we're talking about the, you know, the resurrection and also the white throne judgment. And we're also, when we go to the actual feast of Israel, it's kind of an in-depth question that you're asking. But the reality is that that if you follow the feasts of Israel, they all, each one of the, or if you want to call it a holiday in our modern terms, each one of them is symbolic of one of the events that had occurred. In other words, on Passover was the day that Messiah was actually sacrificed. He was, normally they stayed on the cross for like 3 or 4 days. I mean, the Romans were experts at torture. They would keep him on the cross and keep them alive. But this particular day, they did not. He was only on the cross for 6 hours, in which case he was taken down and put in the ground just in time. Of course, the Jewish day starts in the evening. And then goes through the next day. He was put in the ground just in time for the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And remember, he said, I am the bread of life. I'm, you know, unless a kernel of wheat falls into the ground, you know, there cannot be a harvest. And so he was actually put into the ground. Then 3 days later, he rose on first fruits. And there was a first fruits offering. We also see where he had gone into actually hell at that point and had gotten those that had already, a paradise, which was a place by hell, logistically speaking, just right across a huge chasm that we see. And he had brought them forward. Those were first fruit offering to the Lord. Then exactly 50 days later is when, on the Feast of Pentecost, is when he sent the Holy Spirit to the earth, we see. Well, all of those holidays fall fairly short together. Then we have the span of time. We go like all summer long before there's another one. And then in September, we have the Feast of Trumpets, which is where they call the workers in from the field. And what we see is that each one of these other ones have been fulfilled. We're waiting for the rapture or the Feast of Trumpets, which will happen at the Feast of Trumpets, calling the workers in from the field. Then you also have atonement that'll come after that. And then you also have, which is when all Israel is saved. That's the remnant that are left during the tribulation. They will be saved. And then, of course, the last is the 1,000-year millennial reign, where he actually comes and lives with us, just like the absolute final feast, where they come, they put all of their... they left the city and they go out and they put their tents so that they can, it means God with us.
Ken, there's been talk that under this new world order, they'd like to see the 6 billion people on this planet reduced down to 500 million.
Yeah.
Do you see any of this happening?
There will be a massive reduction in population just as a natural result of the things that come on this planet anyway. I mean, first, once you have a rapture, you're going to have a huge number of people. Then, of course, a huge number of deaths with just the war itself, the events are occurring, whether it's the nuclear exchanges or the asteroids. I mean, there's all kinds of ways to die. So there will be a massive reduction anyway before you even get into that.
Some believe that there are hidden underground caverns that have been built for the elitists. What do you think?
There's more stuff going on underground than we could even begin to imagine. And we haven't even begun to notice everything in the earth. There's still species of animals we haven't found yet.
Oh, there's still dinosaurs on this planet.
Yeah, we still haven't. Well, yeah. I mean, so whether I'm trying to think of that whatever kind of dragon it is that lives out in Nevada, that's got to be considered a dinosaur.
Let's go. First time caller line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, how you guys doing tonight?
Good.
Yeah, love your show. Just started listening to it.
Oh, great. Good to have you with us.
I have one question and one comment.
Sure.
I've read on the internet here and there about, like, whisperings about this empty seat in the UN, seat 666. Supposedly nobody sits in it. I don't know if anybody's scared to sit in it.
The European Union Parliament.
Is that true?
Is that what it is? It's in the Parliament?
Yeah, it's in the European Parliament has 723 members, and for some reason the 666th seat, the way that it's told, is empty, that they intentionally left that seat empty.
Yeah, you're right. It's in Parliament. That's
yeah,
true.
Okay. And also, kind of piggybacking on that, is the logo of the European Union, the harlot riding the beast and the Tower of Babel. I don't know if you've actually seen that, you know, the whole Parliament building.
I have, and yeah. Yeah, I have seen that.
You have seen that?
It's an agency. It's one of the agencies of the European Union.
Okay. So
nobody wanted the 666 seat, though, huh?
Yeah, that's what they say. I've never gotten a full confirmation. I've gone through absolutely every piece of it. A document that I can get, and I've heard about it, and I've seen plenty of articles and things said about it, but as far as being able to get actual physical proof that is the case over there, you know, I've gone through the entire itinerary, but I just can't find anything that verifies that there is in fact a seat that is empty with 666.
Well, I've got a list of the names of the members of the parliament,
right,
and 666 is empty, and they go from like 665, a guy named Zizaner, 667 Capata, 666 is empty, and they say that whoever is 666 may end up being the Antichrist. Do you believe that?
Sure.
You do?
It's highly plausible, because there's going to be a certain amount of arrogance that goes with being the Antichrist.
How bizarre that would be.
Yeah, I mean, just arrogance. Just there's no other word to really describe it. I mean, he wouldn't have a problem in the world with just walking in there and sitting down. You know.
That's a great question. I did not know about that.
What? Yeah.
At all. Okay, stay with us. We'll be back with you in a moment. Ken Parsons, our guest, his website, warzonewinner.com. We'll wrap it up by taking the rest of your questions. What a fast night this has been. If you need to email me, it's george at coasttocoastam.com. Our guest tomorrow on Coast to Coast will be none other than Hans Christian King, internationally acclaimed direct voice medium. We're going to talk about that on Wednesday. Marilyn Schlitz, our guest, as we talk from the Institute of Noetic Sciences. That's where former astronaut Edgar Mitchell, of course, is set up. We're going to talk about remote viewing. Thursday, you asked for him. He'll be our guest, Dr. Wayne Dyer. That's a home run. And then open lines on Friday. Back in a moment. I think it's incredible, Ken, this European Union seat is empty. I mean, I have not heard of that before.
Yeah, I remember that I got chills the first time I saw that. It's an amazing thing, again, especially when you consider that that he does come out of that European Union.
That's probably one of the reasons why nobody wants the seat.
Yeah, probably. Could be.
Or they're keeping it.
Kind of like the number 13.
Or they're keeping it reserved, like for a special sports player, huh?
Well, and again, it's probably a little of both. There's probably some apprehension in taking the seat, because then everybody's saying, hey, they're number 666, they're the Antichrist. So they intentionally don't. But then when that person does come, he doesn't have a problem with sitting in the seat, and therefore letting everybody know that he's not afraid of it.
And you think they will welcome him with open arms?
Oh, yes. Yeah, he'll be extremely intelligent, charismatic, very, very good at what he does. He'll be able to build strong relationships with other countries. He's going to be a master negotiator. He's going to be the one that finally negotiates a peace settlement in Israel and allows Israel to build their temple right next to the Mosque of Omar.
So people won't even see it coming. They'll think he's a good guy.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. People thought Hitler was a good guy.
Well, yeah, that's true. They did until they didn't realize what he was up to.
And until it was a little too late.
You got it. West of the Rockies, welcome to Coast, it's your turn. Hi.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hi there.
Yes, this is Steve in San Diego, listening on the big one, KOGO 600 AM.
Yes, you are. Thanks, Steve.
Yes. Firstly, I would like to say that Ken is probably the most open-minded, broad-minded person you've had on the show who discusses Revelation. I've been a lifelong student of theology, theocracy, and Revelation in particular. But I would like to comment on two of the aspects that the both of you brought up earlier.
Sure.
One being the mag strip on the back of your driver's license.
Mm-hmm.
A number of years ago, California was one of the, if not the first, state to add that to the back of your license. And two things they added to the form to fill out to obtain your license renewal also were you must give your Social Security number, and I certify that I will agree to accept legal service at the address I give. The first thing I did when I relented and gave them my Social Security number and filled out the form, I took out my X-Acto knife and scraped off the mag strip on the back of the license. Then secondly, on the bottom of my Social Security card, which I got when I was 15 years old in 1965, it states at the bottom of my Social Security card, for tax and Social Security purposes only. And now you can't even get a job.
Nope.
Right. Also, and then finally on the microchipping, when they first started doing the pets, there again here in Southern California, one of the first places to do that, I saw that as the first step as the approach to, well, let's do that with humans. Let's ship them. No one can buy, sell, trade, or do anything without having that. It's all very scary. I think it's headed direction that Ken's talking about. The New World Order, I have my own opinions about that and don't believe in that. But greatly appreciate the show tonight, as usual. And I'd like to thank both of you for even, you know, bringing these topics up on the air.
That's what we're here for. Thanks, Steve. Appreciate your comments. Ken, you want to react to any of that?
I thank you very much, and I agree with them, and I think especially on the New World Order, again, it's he doesn't see, if I'm hearing him right, I believe I do, he doesn't see that level of conspiracy is taking place, you know, with as many people that supposedly are involved, you know, where there is a hierarchy, a structure, somebody giving the orders, and then those orders being carried out. And again, that's kind of how I believe. But I can also see where people could look at the evidence and come to the conclusion that well of an orchestrated group is in power, but it's more the result of spiritual influence. In other words, in the extra-dimensional realm where the demonic activity is occurring, where the preparation for all of this is occurring, you know, a person over here gets this idea to do this, another person on the other side of the planet gets another idea to do this, and it looks as though the two had worked in unison, when in fact the two may have never met, but it would have been in the spiritual realm where those things were occurring, therefore leaving, you know, the impression that, yeah, you know, this New World Order is in place right now. But not to take away that there are plenty of groups that are attempting that. I mean, we still have the Skull and Bones, we still have the Illuminati, I mean, the Bilderbergs are still out there, you know, having their meeting every year, Bohemian Grove, I mean, mm-hmm. They're still all out there. I just don't see them having, you know, joined together to the level at which it would appear they have.
Have you heard where some people believe that the possible Antichrist could be, I hate to say this, but a 10-year-old boy who's been living in Germany, apparently heir to a 500-year fortune, which would make him a multi-billionaire when he reaches 18. Have you heard about this one?
I believe I have.
Yep.
I believe I have.
His name's Albert.
His what?
His name's Albert, born in 1984.
Wonder if I can get a piece of toast with this picture on it.
Yeah, really. Wonder how much they'd spend for that, huh?
Hey.
Next up, Wild Card Line, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Good morning, George. Great show.
Thank you.
Ken, I had a question. Have you ever looked at the pre-tribulation rapture in contrast to the pre-wrath rapture? I know that predominantly most of the church is kind of swayed towards the pre-trib rapture, and I'm kind of concerned about that because in Matthew chapter 24, verse 3, the disciples came to Jesus privately asking, you know, what is the sign of the end days and when will this time of your coming be? And then in Matthew 24:29, it says, immediately after the tribulations, the stars begin to fall from heaven. And then also in Revelation 6:9, the fifth seal, between the fifth and sixth seal in Revelation 13, right around the fifth seal, there were souls that were slain under the altar of God, attesting to the word of God and the testimony of God. And then in Revelation 6:13, the stars also fell from heaven.
Yeah.
So it kind of shows...
I understand your position on that. And what I've seen is probably, we have to remember that at the beginning of Revelation, John says, I, a partner with you in tribulation, speaking to his own contemporaries back at that time, saying, hey, look, I'm with you in tribulation. Jesus said that there would be tribulation. And we see during the first seals, as they are loosed, that we're seeing actually a history of our planet as from the fall, meaning those seals have been undone. We really don't see the beginning of the tribulation until the trumpets. Once the seals are done, the very last one is the massive explosion, the sky receding like a scroll, and then we have cataclysmic events happening on Earth, and then it picks up after that, it directly after these events. We'll also notice that earlier, when John is at the throne, he looks and there's nobody in front of God on his throne. There's just a sea of glass. But then you have during the seals, and we have martyrs right now. There are people right now, as we speak during this show, that have lost their lives because they refused to renounce Christ. In a lot of worlds, we have martyrs right now. We've always had those martyrs. That's always been the big misconception because people are going, well, it's always been like that. But yeah, we've been in tribulation. The great tribulation is the 7 years, but we've been in tribulation. It used to be that men didn't kill men when everything was perfect, but now we kill each other. We saw that with Cain and Abel. Then we also saw that now animals turn on each other. It used to be that animals would never kill a person. We were in perfect harmony. But then that began to happen, and we've lost so many people from wars, and we've lost so many people from famine, and we have had martyrs, and all these things have occurred. But first you see them talking about how they want, you know, when are you going to do something about this? He said, let's wait, you know, until the time is full. But you'll notice then all of a sudden, whereas before that there was just an empty sea of glass, out of the clear blue, John looks at where the sea of glass was before, but now there are people from every tribe, every nation, and every tongue just absolutely filling the place, and all the angels were there. So at one point, these people weren't there. Then we have the rapture. Now all of a sudden, John's looking, and now they are here. So really, what you're seeing again is when the stars begin to fall, that's the beginning of the great tribulation. But the tribulation has been the time since the fall of man all the way up until now. And again, that's just... evidenced by even John himself saying, I, a partner with you in tribulation.
Let's go east of the Rockies now. Ken, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. There he is. Where are you driving?
I am driving into Dallas.
Okay, go ahead.
Listen on 570. So, Ken, and I was really confused. Earlier you were talking about a timeline, and you were talking and... In Revelation, does the mark of the beast or the accepting of the mark of the beast, does that happen after rapture?
Yes.
So pretty much anything that we receive, like a Social Security card or anything before, you know, millions of people die and get taken to heaven, it's safe. It's safe to say that's not accepting.
Oh, exact. Yeah, yeah. It's real safe to say that. What we're seeing really, again, is just the assembling of the vehicle that will be used. In other words, the infrastructure is being prepared. The systems that are going to be needed to be in place are being prepared now for that event when it happens. But yeah, there is no mark of the beast now. Nobody's salvation is in any jeopardy simply by having a Social Security number, you know, or having a magnetic strip on the back of their driver's license. It is, again, although part of having a government that is becoming intrusive as a result, again, it's a fear-driven society. Everybody's just afraid that somebody's going to hurt somebody. Almost reminds me of my house and my two girls start fighting, and then finally at one point I'm just like, just don't touch each other. And it's almost like everybody's saying, just quit touching each other. Don't talk.
Yeah. Now, isn't it a ready defense? I mean, is there going to be somebody in the United Nations that... Hello?
Yes, I'm listening.
Oh, I'm sorry. Somebody in the United Nations can stand up and say, look, if we all attack Israel, that's fulfilling the prophecy. You know, in the Bible, is there not going to be anybody in power at that time?
It'll be an operation outside of the European Union. Again, this will actually have Russia, some European Union associated countries will be involved. But for the most part, Muslim countries
do this on their own, huh?
Yeah, and it's going to be just like the United States, and that's going to be their excuse. We're already starting to see that. You know, if Israel didn't have nuclear weapons, then Iran wouldn't need to be trying to make nuclear weapons. But now you're telling us we can't have nuclear weapons. We want Israel to get rid of their nuclear weapons. Now we go to the United Nations and try to get Security Council resolutions, and then, you know, everybody's saying, oh, you've got till this date, Israel, until you get rid of those, and we're not going to let inspectors in. And then America's saying, no, you can't do that. And they're saying, well, you know, you didn't care what we thought with Iraq, so we're not going to care what you think now.
Interesting. Interesting scenario if that happens that way, Ken.
Well, thanks for taking my call.
Okay,
great
thank
show,
you.
North.
Appreciate you being on the show. Next up, who is next up? Let's go west of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi there. Thank you. I would like to find out exactly where your guest stands in trying to explain how all this will seem to happen, because Revelations mostly talks about an unveiling, a choice. I like your idea that we have a choice, a clear choice of,
mm-hmm.
of accepting or not accepting belief in Jesus Christ and God. But I would think that the unveiling mostly would be on how we live our lives and how we live good lives or bad lives. And basically, I'm really basing this on halfway through the book, the second part of Revelations, where the second scroll is revealed to John, and this mighty angel makes a prayer to God, and there's nothing really written on the scroll. We're not told anything about that. And I would like to correlate that with humankind's invention of the written language, which precedes, which actually, you know, makes use of the creation of money, the creation of writing, and from there, the beast or, you know, this bad influence on everybody, you know, to make bad choices. And so I'd
right,
just like
Ken.
To find out where you stand on that.
All right, I'll let you listen on the radio. Ken?
I'm not sure I understand the question well enough to respond to it adequately.
Well, let me ask you this then about secret societies. You believe in them?
Well, yeah. You mean in whether or not they do exist?
Well, and their motives.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of megalomaniacs out there. Absolutely.
That's what they are.
Yeah.
Huh?
And it's just it's mankind trying to dominate mankind. And at the end of the day, it's really them afraid that they're going to be dominated. It really comes from a fear of being dominated, and the only way they can defend against that is to do the dominating. So they gather together, and when you have enough people that have enough resources, that you realize that, you know, a synergistic type of relationship with all of these other people. You know, I own magazines, you own newspapers, and, you know, this other guy over here, you know, owns all the record companies. You know, we should be able to get together, and we might be able to go ahead and sway some policy. We might be able to sway public opinion. We can turn people into heroes. We can turn them into zeros. We can do all kinds of stuff. Where the challenge comes in is that you've probably got some other people with a different agenda that also have magazines and also have power, and this is where all of a sudden we get, you know, different things that, you know, two different magazines with completely two different ideas about a certain subject. And one would be thinking, if there is this type of conspiracy that is operating on this much of a global level that is as fine-tuned and as oiled of a machine as some think, then you wouldn't see that that disagreement, unless they're doing the disagreement on purpose to kind of throw you. So that just undoes the whole thing right there.
Grab one quick final question. Go ahead. Very quickly, you're on Coast to Coast.
Yeah, hi, Mr. Parsons and George. This is Blair in Sedona. Season's greetings.
Sure.
Hey, in this school of life, you know, we're on our way to eternal life. If you read John chapter 14, my Father's house, many mansions, Jesus prepares a place for us. Mr. Parsons, in your mind, what exactly is the new heavens and new earth that will be the result of all these birth pains of revelations?
30 seconds, Ken.
He absolutely just redoes the laws of physics after the entire scenario has played itself out. He redoes the laws of physics. We know that because the New Jerusalem comes down, and this New Jerusalem is like 1,500 miles long. There's no way to have a 1,500 mile long structure on the Earth because of the curvature of the Earth. That would be an impossibility. So we know that the actual structure, the laws of nature, have changed themselves to where this would be a possible structure on the planet. We also know that the oceans are going to be gone. That's how he's going to be able to fit everybody here, because we're talking about generations and generations and generations of people that have gone on after this life coming back to this planet. We live forever here. He gets rid of the oceans to do that. That's how everybody fits on the planet. So this is a little bit of an insight to what the new heavens and the new earth will look like.
Thanks, Ken. You take care of yourself.
Thank you. This has been fantastic.
For Karis Coburn, Steve Carr, Dan Galanti, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, and again, our condolences to Lisa on the death of her mother, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.